You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show, which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is Dr. Tom Fullerton. Dr. Fullerton is a professor here on campus, and he is with the College of Business Administration, and we're going to talk a little bit about the economy and also the UT Border Region Modeling Project. Dr. Fullerton, as always, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis. I'm glad to be here. And you failed to point out that the Master of Ceremonies for the Border Economic Forum that was held on the 16th of January was none other than our own campus celebrity, Louis Sines.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I was honored to do that. Now, as far as the UT Border Region Modeling Project, tell us a little bit about more for with people who are not familiar with that, Tom. What is that?
The UTEP Border Region Modeling Project is a research unit that is housed within the Department of Economics and Finance at UTEP. The genesis of this project goes all the way back to the fall of 1996, and the idea was that there are a lot of economic issues here in the border area that are distinct from what's observed elsewhere in Texas, New Mexico, the state of Chihuahua, or more broadly, the United States and Mexico themselves. And so the idea was to harness some expertise here at UTEP to be able to analyze different issues of importance to the regional economy. And so as part of that effort, a 235 equation econometric model of regional economic activity from north to south in Las Cruces, El Paso, Ciudad Juarez, and Chihuahua City. That model forms sort of the centerpiece of all activities at the Border Region Modeling Project. And once every year, we release a short-term cyclical forecast that, examines what's going on nationally in the United States, what's going on nationally in Mexico, and then, utilizes the model to interpret what those trends imply for this regional area.
How have those numbers changed, Tom, over the last few years, especially with the violence in Mexico?
At this point, the only thing we've been able to document with respect to drug-related violence in northern Mexico is that it causes retail activity in Ciudad Juarez to decline. We haven't been able to examine the impacts on the Chihuahua City economy, but in the case of Juarez and all of the other border cities from Tijuana all the way to Matamoros, if you go from west to east, it's undeniable that the drug-related violence causes commercial activity to decline in these northern Mexico metropolitan economies. And the reason is, usually in the United States or in Western Europe, when this type of problem in terms of widespread crime erupts, what it does is it displaces retail activity from one area within those cities to another area. What we've documented in terms of the border areas is that they actually lose that retail activity. And the reason is because each of these six metropolitan economies in northern Mexico lie physically adjacent to U.S. metropolitan areas that have alternative commercial operations available to customers that actually reside in Mexico. And so they're willing to put up with the long lines at the bridges in order to shop in a safer environment.
And talking about that, traditionally this time of year, Holy Week, traditionally a lot of Mexican people will come into the United States to do some shopping or holiday visits. Has that changed over the years again, and do you expect anything different this year perhaps?
It's hard to say whether the Easter vacation travel patterns have changed at all. If anything, there's probably fewer visitors than was the case prior to 2001. Once 9/11 hit in 2001, the volume of visitor traffic from northern Mexico declined, and that's because it's so much more of a hassle to actually gain access to the United States because of all the security concerns. It's ironic because all the terrorist attacks came from Canada. They didn't come from Mexico, but it seems like the fear, at least in terms of our Beltway denizens in Congress in Washington, D.C., the fear is that there's going to be any type of terrorist threat is likely to come from Mexico rather than from Canada. Nevertheless, in terms of the Easter vacation, the Holy Week vacation in Mexico is quite extensive, 2 weeks out of every year. And so there's always a lot of traffic that does come up north from Mexico, even though it's probably smaller now than it was in the years prior to 2001.
And when you talked about not minding waiting in line, shopping in a safer environment, that means that a lot of these shoppers are not only just spending money, but they're spending cash.
Yeah, they're coming over here, and a lot of them, obtain dollars before they come into El Paso or other border metropolitan areas, and they spend those dollars once they're here. About 25% of all retail operations in El Paso are also willing to accept pesos. And, that does two things. One, if somebody runs out of their dollars and doesn't want to go look for an exchange house or for a commercial bank in which to obtain more dollars, they're able to spend pesos at these particular operations. It also makes them feel more welcome. When people from the United States go into Mexico, they spend dollars freely, at least in the border cities. That is a confidence builder in terms of that consumer traffic. Well, same thing here. More and more businesses throughout the border areas of the United States are willing to accept pesos now, and that encourages more foot traffic and more automobile traffic from northern Mexico.
What about the fact that downtown? How does that affect business and also people in general in their everyday public life?
Well, let's see. What's going on in terms of downtown El Paso is a type of urban revitalization that always causes, additional commercial activity to take place, and it attracts more visitors. And it's going to attract more visitors from south of the border. And, this is a multi-pronged effort. The most recent thing in the news has been about the demolition of the Insight Science Museum and the prospective demolition of City Hall. And the immediate effects of those moves have been to cause office vacancy rates in downtown El Paso to plummet, because all of the city departments are now housed in other buildings that are scattered around central El Paso. But beyond that, there are a number of residential developments going on downtown. And that raises, the volume of traffic in the commercial areas. It also makes downtown a lot more attractive, because instead of empty buildings, we now have these new facilities that are upgraded. They look modern. They look attractive. They're attracting people to relocate downtown. And, we're probably on the verge of observing a downtown renaissance in El Paso that is similar to what has been observed in other medium-sized cities scattered throughout the United States. I say probably because there's never a 100% guarantee in terms of any type of urban redevelopment effort. But in terms of El Paso, it's been building over time. Things seem to mainly be headed in the right direction always. The first wave of downtown revitalization that was very impressive was the relocation of a lot of the museums downtown. And that had, dual effects. One, it attracted more people downtown. Two, it helped reduce the vacancy rate. The vacancy rate downtown in the late 1990s was astronomical. That has gone down a lot since then, and it continues to go down. And there's a lot more investment in downtown, and now downtown has a viable entertainment district. It's developing a viable residential district, and things seem to be improving. So it's an exciting time to observe what's going on in central El Paso simply from an urban economic perspective.
What about the people who come over here on a daily basis? They don't have a lot of money to spend, and so they go to sometimes some of the used clothing shops, thrift shops, and some of them have gone to some of these family-owned grocery stores for years and years.
Well, anybody's dollar that gets spent anywhere in the world has the same impact as anybody else's dollar in terms of individuals who have limited resources associated with them. Those resources still get spent, and in terms of the businesses that cater to them, they have identified a niche in the market that they can can address on a profitable basis. And that's why so many of these small businesses have survived so many decades. There's a lot of stores, a lot of grocery stores and convenience stores in South Central El Paso that have been there for decades. And it's because they're able to turn a profit. And so it's a competitive environment. But experienced business people recognize that it's something that can be done in a profitable manner. They are more than covering their costs. And that's something that if those businesses weren't there, it would represent a lost opportunity in terms of regional economic performance. And so they fill a vital need in terms of what's going on.
Tom, we hear all the time about history repeating itself, and I'm sure we see sometimes toys or candy that we remember as when we were kids, and they said, oh, we should have never thrown that away. And it seems like nowadays, I see a lot of men wearing suits and fedoras now, okay, like the 1940s, 1950s. And one of the things that is happening in some of the cities also is that there, people are turning old office buildings into apartments or condos. And there was a recent article in the El Paso Times about that. Is that something that perhaps you think is going to thrive in El Paso as far as, you know, the that type of living, vintage, living in an apartment downtown?
It should, simply because, that trend has been observed in so many places, not only in the United States, but also Canada, Western Europe, and elsewhere. And the reason it is because it allows people to have a lot more efficient access both to jobs and to entertainment opportunities in, central cities. Now, I say it should. I'm hedging my bets a little bit because the urban geography of El Paso is a lot more fractured than what it is in other areas. And so that makes, the attractiveness of the Central District a little bit less pronounced here than it is elsewhere. And that's simply because we've got one, we're surrounded by two state boundaries on the south and on the north and on the west. We're also surrounded by an international boundary on the south and the west. And we have a mountain range that goes right down through the middle of the city. We've got an international airport that's located within the city limits. We also have railroad yards located within the city limits, and we've got a military base located within the city limits. And so El Paso is a lot more geographically fractured than your typical cities are elsewhere in the country. But that being said, the type of downtown investments that are going on and the type of urban infill activities that are being encouraged throughout the city, those are likely to meet with success. And the reason is that they allow people to reduce what economists refer to as transactions costs. It reduces transportation time and transportation costs when they can reside in areas that are more centrally located and have access to the type of commercial things that all households require to manage their affairs on a day-to-day basis.
Now, speaking of transportation, and we talked about this last time that we spoke before the conference, the fact that El Paso is very different when it comes to transportation, because some people will say, well, it's hard to ride the bus here in El Paso, or they should build a little monorail, a train. But as you mentioned, because the way the city is so spread out, it's very complicated.
It is complicated. And in this regard, Sun Metro is doing a good job. Sun Metro is always studying where they need to have hubs located. They're upgrading those hubs, making them, more comfortable for people, because if you're taking the bus and waiting on the bus, you're out there in the elements where they're always improving their facilities. And Sun Metro, I think at some point in the future is going to be viewed as positively as the airport. The airport has always done a very good job of contributing to the metropolitan economy. Sun Metro is as well. I'm more skeptical, however, about the proposed trolley system from the Haskins Center to South El Paso. I remember when the old trolley train tracks were in downtown El Paso. They tore up everybody's tires. Nobody really rode the trolleys very much. I'm skeptical about that one. Urban redevelopment is a trial and error process. And a lot of things, maybe I'm going to be incorrect and city council is going to be correct in terms of trolleys. But in terms of Sun Metro and the job it's doing, It is becoming one of the best managed aspects of this urban economy.
But, of course, some people still think that we ride horses and wagons out here, right? Okay, all kidding aside now. Let's get back to when you were talking about money and the economy. Some people are saying, and we talked about this before, and I know you're a big advocate of going against the term brain drain, because a lot of people have always talked about brain drain. And I'm starting to hear that again, the fact that, you know, unless El Paso does something, people are just leaving. They're not paying any money here. They're going to have to go somewhere else. And so what are we training people here for? Yet you have always been very optimistic about this and the fact that it's not what people think it is.
No. See, anytime there's a job opening in El Paso, you have lots of applicants, not only locally, but also regionally and nationally. There are lots of people who want to relocate to El Paso and other similar cities. What happens is that during periods when the local unemployment rate is higher than what it is elsewhere, then there's a natural tendency for underutilized labor resources to relocate. And think about it. If you have somebody who is a college graduate and can work here in El Paso and be underemployed, or relocate to Midland or Albuquerque and be fully employed, well, that's a pretty strong incentive for that individual to relocate. But a lot of those people will move back when they get the opportunity. And, you know, the experience that they gain elsewhere makes them more productive when they do return. And so, you know, let's see, I don't think anybody considered me to be a brain drain from Florida when I relocated from Florida to El Paso. It just simply it represented an efficiency gain, because there was an opening for, you know, the type of economic research I do here in El Paso. And so it improved, productivity in El Paso. They were able to replace me in Florida. And so, the underemployed person in Florida that took my old job, that person improved their standard of living. And then hopefully the regional productivity improved as a consequence of me being willing to relocate. And that goes on an ongoing basis. When we observe out migration, it tends to be when regional unemployment rates are mismatched, and that's when some cities experience out migration. Other cities with low unemployment rates, they experience in migration, and it's a constant ebb and flow.
One of the things that happened at that conference that you hosted a few months back is there were a lot of people talking about different things, and some of the things that I want to bring up. But first, the talk about how many jobs are in Houston, construction jobs, and the type of jobs also that are happening here. Mr. Houghton talked about the Department of Transportation, all the projects going on around here, and then also, of course, the baseball stadium and what's going on there. And people may not be aware of all these projects that are going on and how much this is going to change the face of the city. Oh, and I forgot to mention, of course, the new UTEP on the move.
That's correct. You wouldn't observe that type of investment occurring if El Paso was not expanding and growing and observing the new types of business opportunities that are emerging. In terms of Houston, you know, Houston has a highly cyclical economy. It's driven primarily by the energy industry, although now it's diversified into a lot of different fields, and it's got a huge health sciences complex there as well. But in terms of Houston right now, the stars are aligned in favor of Houston, and that's why it's expanding so rapidly. We've seen periods when the stars have been aligned for El Paso. In fact, during the recent recession, El Paso weathered the storm better than most metropolitan economies throughout the United States, and that was because we had expansions taking place at UTEP, at Texas Tech, and at Fort Bliss. And, you know, those three things all occurred in the midst of the recession. The impacts of the recession were less severe here than they were elsewhere. In terms of what's going on now, the investments in that highway infrastructure that Mr. Houghton was talking about, all of the investments in the streets grid that are currently going on and in the water and sewer grid that are currently going on that are being driven locally, those things ultimately are going to raise regional efficiency and regional productivity within the city. that improves standards of living. And so, it's right now it's a headache, but guess what? All of those construction projects that force you to take detours, previously the best routes to get around town, those things ultimately are going to pay off, and they are going to help the city. It's going to help our performance, and ultimately it's going to help our incomes and our standards of living. So, those things represent headaches. People will complain about them. It disrupts business patterns in the short run, but in the long run, it contributes to our overall economic well-being.
And then once it's finished, all of a sudden I go, wow, where did this come from? I didn't realize it was here.
It's amazing how fast people forget, the detours and everything else. But right now, they represent, a headache. They disrupt things, but it's the right type of headache to have.
Tom, there was talk about Mexico and them being, of course, one of our top trading partners. But a couple of weeks ago, perhaps even a month ago, the New York Times had an article about Mexico and how it's expanding its trade relations and competing with Brazil and Venezuela and China and some of these other places. So tell us a little bit about how that can affect the relationships between Mexico and the U.S.
Well, if those are viable business opportunities, it's a good idea for Mexico to pursue those opportunities. For the most part, Mexico's trade opportunities are going to be oriented towards North America. However, that does not mean that other trade opportunities with other regions of the world are precluded. And to the extent that more and more manufacturing takes place within Mexico and more products are exported to other countries around the world, that's good. Anytime your neighbor does better, that, from an economic perspective, that also helps you, because guess what? If incomes rise in Mexico, guess what? Mexican consumers want to purchase. Mexican consumers are some of the most loyal customers in the world, and they love buying goods and products from the United States. By the way, people in the United States have evolved in terms of their taste. And anywhere you go in the United States, you now find products of Mexico on the shelves and available to consumers. So if Mexico is developing profitable business ventures that involve South America, Europe, or East Asia, that's great. That simply is another expression of globalization. And globalization really ultimately is all about more efficient production and lower costs, better varieties, and more competition in terms of consumer goods that are provided to residents of countries in which globalization is occurring.
Now, as far as competition and schools, jobs, what about UTEP? And Dr. Natalicia laid out the plan as far as what UTEP will look like in the future. And, people who have been here, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago are going, wow, what has changed here? It's changed so drastically. And some of the plans that she showed us, people aren't going to recognize UTEP anymore.
Now, the nature of the central campus is going to change enormously. Part of that is being driven by the fact that other state schools, are at capacity and in terms of future waves of high school graduates, the state is going to try to orient them towards other campuses like UTEP. Part of it is the fact that UTEP, particularly under the Natalicio administration, has developed a unique campus environment. And it's one of the most attractive campuses in the entire state, in the entire country, or the entire world. And Dr. Natalicio recognized this early on in her presidency. But the Bhutanese architecture goes well with the desert and is something that sets our campus apart from other campuses elsewhere in the world. And it's become a strength that nobody else can really replicate. If they do try to replicate it, it's going to take them decades to get where we are. And so we're in good shape. And in terms of making this campus attractive to those future waves of high school graduates, to the extent that the central campus environment improves, that helps it be more efficient in terms of, one, moving students around between their classes, 2, improving the environment here on campus, and 3, recruiting those waves of graduates that are going to come in the future. Steve Murdoch, the former state demographer as well as director of the Census Bureau, he gave a presentation as part of the Millennium Lecture Series a couple years back, and he was pointing out that UTEP in a lot of ways is ahead of the curve, and this is one manner in which UTEP is ahead of the curve.
What's going to happen to education as far as people who can't afford to go out there and get a degree? And then you hear from the other side, people are saying, well, you know, I have 2 degrees and I can't get a good job.
Okay. In terms of, the job market once you graduate, there's no guarantee that you're going to get the job you want. It's a competitive labor market and it's hard to get a job. However, the statistics are unambiguous, and we've published research about this at the Border Region Modeling Project. If you get a college degree, the likelihood of you being gainfully employed is much higher than it is for somebody who has only a high school degree or somebody who has not yet graduated from high school. So your job prospects are better with a college degree in the modern economy in the United States than they are without it. That's no guarantee, but you have improved your job prospects. In terms of tuition, remember, state legislatures throughout the country are cutting back on the revenues available to public universities. Therefore, given that, there is no choice. Tuition and fees have to increase, and they are going to continue to increase. In the current legislative session in Austin, they've been discussing the fact that there is surplus funds available, but legislators are not willing to dedicate all of those newly available funds to public education, including public universities and colleges. And that's something that is not unique to Texas. That's something that is observed throughout most of the United States. And as a consequence of that, tuition and fees will go up in the future. However, the payoff to a college investment is still going to remain positive. And there are a lot of students out there who will save money by attending UTEP as opposed to going to a private university or as opposed to going to a private profit university.
Dr. Fullerton, thank you very much for being with us here today. Dr. Fullerton, of course, does not have a crystal ball, and if he did, we both wouldn't be here. We'd be somewhere else perhaps. Anyway, but we've been visiting with Dr. Tom Fullerton with the College of Business Administration and the UT Board Region Modeling Project. Thank you, Dr. Fullerton, for being with us here.
Thank you, Louis. It's a pleasure.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Earl O'Veal. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.